Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, I'm pleased to present, as part of the show, the debut of what I'm calling Corona Radio Theater. My producer, Neil Swinkles, and I have reached out to Bay Area theater companies in this time of crisis and offered them a platform for a live, contemporary, or classic radio play. In the weeks ahead, technology permitting, we'll be hearing from San Francisco Playhouse, The Marsh, Theater Works, American Conservatory Theater, and Theater Rhinoceros. For today's debut, actors from Word for Word, the theater company that brings short stories from the page to the stage, performs Tobias Wolff's story, Firelight. Plus contributor Peter Robinson on how Pygmalion became My Fair Lady. Stay with us. Memorable music indeed by Frederick Lowe and On the Street Where You Live. Lyrics penned by Alan J. Lerner. But what was the journey from the George Bernard Shaw story of Pygmalion to what has been called the perfect musical? Open Air's regular contributor, Peter Robinson, has the story.
Yeah, hi, David. Good to be here. And that simple tune, On the Street Where I Live, or The Street Where He Lived, is, of course, the residence of Professor Higgins. And what we're going to do is look at some of the transformations that took place from 1913, when Pygmalion was first written. It was actually staged, believe it or not, first in Vienna and then in London. And then it went through a second phase in 1938, when they made the black and white version, sticking with the same title, and then finally where that music came from, My Fair Lady. A couple of short things about George Bernard Shaw. He was an ardent feminist. He was certainly a socialist belonging to the Fabian Society, and he saw Pygmalion as an opportunity to bring to a wider audience some of the issues that were part of the closing days of Edwardian England. I call that the twilight of empire. It was 5 years before Votes for Women, and of course Pygmalion is the story of a flower seller who, with the right coaching and the right elocution lessons, can speak like a duchess. And the story evolves partly as a love story, and then it has a twist at the end. Does she really like, love, or go with her professor? It's a story about gender, it's a story about class, and it stayed pretty true to the text, particularly in the 1938 version of the movie. In the 1938 version, there's still an upset towards the end. George Bernard Shaw did not believe in Hollywood endings, but was required to have a happy ending, hence Eliza brings the favorite garment, the professor's slippers, to his leather armchair. So we're going to look both at some of the music, some of the tunes, and some of the ways My Fair Lady adapted. And I think I'm going to begin actually with a piece of piano playing, because it is a musical as much as it is about speech, pronunciation, and drama. And I think some of the tunes, some of the music themselves stand in their own right, because you could almost hear the voice of Rex Harrison, who didn't sing, he spoke. But here's what the background to I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face sounds like. And I think that kind of fruity voice of Rex Harrison coming to a moment of recognition that his student, Eliza, the Doolittle flower girl, has actually become part of his life. And I think the way he speaks things, and of course, with Rex Harrison, speaking was more important than singing. And in one particular monologue, Why Can't a Woman Be More Like a Man, it takes him about 20 minutes to come down a staircase into a library and raise the basic question about gender. So this to me is also a musical, and it's a play very much about the nature of gender. And I think that raises interesting questions about Higgins' own relationship with Colonel Pickering. Colonel Pickering is played by Wilfred Hyde White in the musical version, and the basis of the story is that he wages a bet that he can get Eliza to actually speak like a duchess. And I think that's one of the key issues here. What does speech matter? And of course, for Eliza, it matters a great deal, because she no longer wants to be a flower girl, she wants to be the owner of a flower shop. So there are indeed questions of poverty and questions of social ascendancy. Now, I've spoken about language. In the 1938 version, it's the first movie that ever used the word bloody. When she says, not bloody likely, she is suddenly speaking in a Cockney accent. And believe it or not, that word bloody had not been used before in the movie industry. So there we go, another great first for George Bernard Shaw, who above all was a linguist, and not only a linguist, but a person who specialized in identifying different regions of the country and the places in which they spoke. Now, speaking about language, one of the key songs in the performance is Wouldn't It Be Lovely? And just take the pronunciation of that word lovely, because a normally way to say lovely is lovely. Isn't it lovely? Hey, ain't it lovely? But no, it suddenly turns into the extra syllable, wouldn't it be lovely? And why would it be lovely? Because all she wanted was a room somewhere. Again, we're back into the property business, and here we go with another great number from My Fair Lady. And she is humming this tune along. And of course, in the film version, initially it was dubbed because they didn't think Audrey Hepburn had the voice to carry the tune. So essentially, we will be hearing that at a point in a moment. What also happens is the way people were taught speech. And anybody who remembers a movie called The Spring King's Speech, they have an excellent example of how the king was helped get over a stutter. And one of the horrible happenings is they used to put marbles in the person's mouth so that they would have to speak in a very strange sort of form, which emphasizes the upper lip. Well, of course, in the film version, they do show marbles being put into her mouth. That's Eliza's mouth. They turn out to be chocolate. And this leads to how H's are dropped when you speak Cockney or East End London. In Hartford, Erith and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly happen. So this dropping of the H word, hurricanes hardly happen, again, is something that has to be come over. An H is a tricky word in terms of pronunciation. I know when I was learning it, I always thought it actually began with the letter H, And I didn't realize we were talking about H without the H, although you have to sign the H when you do it. So looking to that pronunciation, the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain. And then a second kind of climatic interpretation in Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly happen. It's a good example where elocution, the pronunciation of words, becomes a major distinction in class awareness. Now, George Bernard Shaw was not the first into this. Gilbert and Sullivan, in their early operettas in the 1880s and 1890s, had already poked fun at great British institutions, from the judiciary to the admiralty to the aristocracy. And he did have one definition of a House of Lords member, and the member says to the member of the House of Lords, "Tell me, sir, what do you do?" And he says, "Nothing in particular, but I do it particularly well." And I smile about that line many times because I think with the conversations between Henry Higgins and Colonel Pickering, there is a lot of sitting around in armchairs and wondering about how the world's going, although it doesn't actually touch you at the emotional level. And I think that's the great breakthrough with Eliza, is that she touches people at the emotional level, whether it's with her father, whether it's with the professor, or even whether it's with Colonel Pickering. So I don't know how the music is going back here, but if we were able to hear the rain in Spain, we could make another dash for it and see where we're going and find out what happened when it rained in Spain.
Indeed, Peter, so many lovely tunes from this 1956 Broadway production recording. Wouldn't it be lovely with a little bit of luck? Get me to the church on time. I could have danced all night. On the street where you live, which we heard in the overture. And, of course, the rain in Spain. The musical was a notable critical and popular success, won the 1957 Tony Award for Best Musical, going up against Bells Are Ringing, Candide, and The Most Happy Fella. It set a record for the longest run of any show on Broadway up to that time, followed by a hit London production, also with Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews, a popular film version, ditto, many revivals, and also won the 2002 Olivier Award for Best Musical. Peter, thank you for your contribution. Let's hear that memorable tune when Eliza finally gets it, The Rain in Spain.
And don't forget, where it rains, everyone give me the answer. Here we go.
In Spain. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you,
David. The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Again?
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it. I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, she's got it. By George, she's got it. Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that soggy plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the
Hereford and Hampshire.
Hurricanes hardly happen. How kind of you to let me come.
Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that blasted plain?
Rex Harrison, Julie Andrews, and the original Broadway cast of The Rain in Spain Stays Mainly in the Plain, My Fair Lady, Lerner and Lowe's 1956 classic. That original Broadway production, by the way, was staged by none other than Moss Hart.